Podcast. We hope you're encouraged by this message.
Are you in Hebrews 12? Yep. Verse 1. And I'm starting a new series this morning called Run Your Race. And I realize it's not that original. But I want to say some things about this particular topic. And we're going to look at this over 3 or 4 weeks. And this series comes courtesy to you from my daughter Savannah's athletics carnival training, or in fact, cross-country training. And so in her school, she went to zone for cross-country, and leading up to the cross-country race, we were doing some training together, which is an added bonus when your kids do that because it forces you to train with them and you get free fitness in the middle of it, which was really cool. So anyway, we were down at the park doing some training, some long-distance running and doing some laps of the oval, which was fun. And I just felt a nudge from the Holy Spirit that this was something he wanted to say to us as a church about this idea of running our own race, running the race that God has set before us. And so Hebrews 12 verse 1 says this, and this is a verse you probably read a million times, but in the NIV translation it says, therefore, now this is therefore because of what we've just read in Hebrews 11, which is the whole great hallmark of faith, all of the great heroes of faith that have run their race. And now therefore, it's our turn. He says, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, my key verse, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You read that verse before? I want to talk about this idea of running our own race because the life you and I are living right now, the Christian life, is likened to a running contest, a race of faith which every believer is engaged in running. And it's a contest of faith that you are and I are in right now. We are in a race. If you've accepted Jesus Christ into your life, you are now engaged in a heavenly race that God has set before you. And it has a heavenly prize at the end of your race. And at the end of your race, your prize will be Jesus Christ himself at the end of the finish line, waiting for you as you finish your race, just like those great men and women in chapter 11 of Hebrews. Because the moment you said yes to Jesus, the moment you gave your heart to Jesus, the starter gun went off. And your race began. And you and I are now engaged in a race of faith for us. And our race is now. Our race is now. Not yesterday, not even tomorrow. Right now. And the whole idea of therefore is it's like the Hebrews 11 account is like their journey, their race. And now they have handed over the baton to the next generation. And you and I in our generation owe it to the generation before us to take that baton and get in the race and actually do something with our lives. You know, all across the church on the coast, across Australia, wherever you are, men and women have sacrificed their lives, not necessarily physically or literally, but have given their lives for the kingdom's sake and have sown into this generation. And now it's our turn to make sure that we take up the baton and keep running the race that God has set for us. I thank God for the leadership before us in this church who started this church, who started something, and the baton has been handed to Amy and I, and we owe it to the previous leadership and the previous generation and the previous givers and those who are not even in this church anymore, who were part of something here, and now we're taking the baton and we're running the race that God has set for us, yeah? And, you know, the fact is that God has plucked you out of eternity and positioned you in time right now and given you gifts, giving you calling, giving you everything you need right now to run a race that God has set before you. That's what I want to talk about this morning. I want to particularly focus in on the part of the verse that says, let us run with endurance. I'm going to talk about endurance in a few weeks. Let us run with endurance, the race marked out for us. You know, there's a race that's marked out for you, specifically marked out. One translation says, the race set before you. That term marked out, it means it's been appointed or established ahead of time. There's been a race that has been marked out. The course has been set by your Creator. It's been established for you, and now it's ready for you to run. And it's specifically been marked out for you. And you are called to run your race. In fact, this is what it means. It means in our life, God has determined the shape of the course. He's determined that. He's established the climate and the environment of your race. He's determined how many obstacles and how many hurdles are going to be in your race. He set the predetermined length of your race. That's worth talking about. Listen, nobody's going home to heaven unless God has the say-so. We are on this planet for the length of time God establishes. All right, I don't believe in giving the devil more credit than what he should have. God determines the length of our race. He's also determined the markers along the way and how many signposts you're going to need to finish your race. What I'm trying to say to you is that God has set out a race for you. It's marked out. The course has been laid out. And he's calling you right now to run your specific race. Now, if God orchestrates each person's race, it means that no person's race is the same as another. No two races are the same. Your race is different to my race, but we all got called to a race. Ephesians 2:10, Paul writes this. He says, "For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." There it is. God prepared in advance a life of faith for you to walk in. There's something for you to do on the earth. The wisest thing any person can do this morning is figure out what God's called you to do and do it. There are way too many Christians who are living for themselves and just being honest, who are not have not discovered the life that God has called them to do. And let me tell you, it's the best thing you could ever do is find out what God's called you to do and walk in it. It's fulfilling. Now, if God has set our race, which he has, you'll be judged and asked to give an account for the race you were called to run. You're not going to have to give an account for my race or your partner's race, or even the race you wanted to run, or the race you think you should run. You'll be called to give an account to your Creator for the race he called you to run. And I think that's very, very important. And I want to talk about that because if any of you have ever started a fitness program involving a personal trainer, which I have, apart from the fact that they punish you endlessly, a real professional will do one thing. They will tailor-make the fitness program to your specific goals. The worst thing any fitness, is that right, Ben? The worst thing any person on a fitness journey can do is try to adapt a fitness program for somebody else. You can learn from it, but the best fitness program is to have something tailored specifically to your energy levels, to your body weight, all of those things. It's foolish to try to do someone else's fitness program. And the truth is that you and I were not called to run somebody else's race. I'm not called to run your race, and you're not called to run my race. Here's the thing, you know, we have this thing because we can be inspired by other people. You can learn from others. You can admire others. You can appreciate others. You can encourage by others. But at the end of the day, you have to stay in your lane and run your race. This is what this series is about. And I know this sounds basic, but it's very hard to do. And I'm going to show you through some other texts and some other examples about how much this is such a problem for humans to do, is to run our own race. And I feel like, to be honest, there are far too many people in the world, particularly and in the church, who are trying to run someone else's race. They're trying to run a race that somebody else has set, or the race they think they should run, or the race that their parents set for them, or the race that whatever, a multitude of reasons of why people don't run somebody else's or run their own race. And you know in a running race, when you get ready, the track caller gets you set, they say, on your marks, get set, go. I think for a lot of people, we're not on our own mark, we're on their mark. God has set us for the race, and instead of being on our mark, we're on their mark because we haven't quite yet discovered what God has called us to do. Okay, so I want to talk about this thing this morning and as we lead into this series because the key to running your own race, and it won't be any surprise to you because it's right in the text, the key to running your own race this morning and being engaged in the contest God has called you to be engaged in is where you focus your eyes. It's where you fix your attention. The text says, let's go back to Hebrews 12, let us run with perseverance, the race marked out for us. Here's the key, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Wherever you fix your eyes is where you'll run. In fact, because you'll always steer towards where you stare. Your direction is determined by your focus. Your direction is determined by your focus. And so the writer of Hebrews says the way to run your race is to keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. Now, you know that, and we know that, and we've heard that a million times in church. But fixing our eyes on Jesus is that the picture of the word, it's aphoreia was the Greek word, and it basically pictures a runner who is oblivious to everything around them. They're oblivious to the crowd. They're oblivious to other runners, and they are so fixed on the finish line with the prize to the exclusion of everything else. It is a picture of absolute concentration and focus. It's not a casual glance at Jesus. It's not a once in a while, just take a look at Jesus and find out what he wants for me. What the writer's trying to convey here is that it's a continual, fixed, constant inner focus on the one who called you. That's what he's trying to say. The author and finisher of our faith. And you're going to need faith to run this race. So it makes sense to keep your eyes fixed on the one who's the author and finisher of faith. You know, at Savannah's first ever school athletics carnival, I saw this kind of principle illustrated out, I don't know when it was, a couple of years ago. Obviously, I'm going to use running race examples if you haven't figured it out. But Savannah is actually quite a good runner. She takes after her father, of course. But she's got a little bit of ability. You're all laughing as if to say that it couldn't be true. Do you think she takes after Amy's running? This funny thing happened, right? So she won the 50-meter race and dominated, like won easily. She's good at that area. And then the 100-meter race, because we did some training, I'm like, okay, the 100 meters is going to be a little bit more difficult, Savannah. It's going to be a bit longer. So therefore, your focus is going to need to be different in this race, and it's going to be a little bit harder. Now, when I go to her athletics carnival, I always do this one thing. I always tell Savannah, I'll be waiting for you at the finish line. I stand at the end. I'm not going to be that parent that goes up and down the sidelines like my wife. I refuse to be that parent. Some of you are laughing, but some of you are that parent. Don't lie. But I tell Savannah, Daddy is going to be at the finish line. And I want you, when you run this race and when that gun goes off, I want you to fix your eyes on your dad, and I'm going to be standing at the finish line, and I want you to keep your eyes on me the entire race. And so I did that, and I stood at the end of the finish line, and this interesting thing happened in the 100-meter race. She was about 15, 20 meters from the end. She was in front. She was winning, and another child came up sort of next to her, kind of mounted a challenge, and I knew Savannah had another gear in her because we'd trained. We'd done this, you know. We prepared for this. And as this other child mounted a challenge, I literally watched Savannah, her focus came off me, and she began to put it on the child next to her. And she began to be fixated and focused on the child next to her. And she lost that race and she came second, a race she probably should have easily won. As soon as she took her focus off me, off the finish line, and put it on the person next to her, she lost that race. Now, that sounds silly and it seems so basic, but here's the truth for you and I in life. Our challenge in life is to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus and nobody else, to run our race and keep our focus on the one who's called us. I can't run my race while watching you in your lane. Now, if you're like me, I often, this is my problem, have one eye on Jesus and one eye on the person next to me. It's often both, one eye on Jesus and one eye on the person next to me. And I think this speaks to probably the biggest obstacle, which I want to take a bat to this morning in terms of running your race. The biggest obstacle is comparison. The biggest problem to running your own race is comparison. Comparison. We live in the age where comparison has never been more prevalent. In this digital online age, comparison is everywhere. Social media is right now inundating you with opportunities to compare. Every single day, you are inundated with comparison opportunities. In fact, social media reminds me of the fairy tale Snow White, because I have two daughters. I've seen a fairy tale or two in my life. But the fairy tale Snow White, and where the evil mother goes to the mirror on the wall, and we all know the fairy tale. She goes to the mirror and she says, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?" I'm available for the stage play, Mrs. Finlay, just letting you know. "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of the wall? Tell me what I should look like. Tell me what my life should be. Tell me what I want to hear." And I suspect sometimes our screens become like mirrors back to us in life, telling us what our life should be like. You should have this house. You should wear these clothes. You should have these friends. You should have this. You should have this lifestyle. And if for some reason your life is not what you see in the screen, you somehow start to feel like your life is a failure. Why? Because you have compared your life to somebody else's highlight reel. Tell me how my life should look. It's gone quiet in this room because I think all of us have done that to an extent. And the problem with comparison is that it always will come at the expense of contentment. Always kills off contentment. It's a cancer to contentment. How do I know this? Because have you ever bought a gift for someone, let's say anniversary time or Christmas for your wife, and you think you've nailed it, and then you scroll on social media and some other guy has bought like the best gift ever, and all of a sudden the bread maker, not a really good gift, or whatever it is that you bought for your spouse, and some other guy's bought tickets to Paris, all of a sudden the thing that you hired or you got doesn't feel as special anymore. And that's what life is like. All of a sudden you start looking at everybody else's blessing, and the special, unique thing that you have no longer feels as special anymore, because comparison always robs contentment. It steals joy. The fastest way to have joy robbed is to compare your life. And what happens when you start running your race with your eyes on the person next to you, not on the lane in front of you? A crash is coming. And for a lot of people in life, they have a spiritual crash because the life that God has called them to live is not lining up with the life that they're seeing in their mobile phones. And a crash happens. And I'm convinced, church, I'm convinced that one of the enemy's number one distractions in life and mass destructions is comparison. Because if he can get you comparing yourself to the person next to you and get your eyes off the race he's called you to do, he's halfway to getting you out of your calling and your destiny. It's important. Let's not forget that Lucifer was kicked out of heaven for comparing himself to God. It derailed his destiny. He said, "I will be like God." He began to measure himself against God and compare, and he was kicked out of heaven. Comparison will destroy your destiny. It'll get you focused on the life you think you should be living rather than the life that God has called you to live. And I want to take a quick look at this morning at someone in the Old Testament who crashed because of comparison, and let you see the perils of it, because it's a real big issue. And if you don't have a problem with comparison this morning, all power to you. But I suspect that some of you in the room, if you're really honest, comparison has been a problem. So 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 5 to 9 is where we're going to be. And we're going to look at just King Saul quickly. And I'm not going to labor on this story. But those of you that know the story of King Saul know that King Saul was a king who started out well and finished badly. He was called by God and started his race, and things began to unravel. And things take a real turn for the worst in chapter 18 of verse 5. Now, just to give you the context, King Saul is in power, but he's starting to, his heart has moved further and further away from God. Disobedience has crept in. His eyes are off God. His eyes are on power and control. And now David, who's just defeated Goliath, has come onto the scene. And David is sent into the service of Saul. I want you to remember that, because David is supposed to be a blessing to Saul. Now, I want you to see what happens in verse 5 of 1 Samuel chapter 18. It says this: "When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs, with timbrels and lyres." A little bit like Amy when I come home from work most afternoons. I love it. Verse 7, as they dance, I'm naughty, I've been away 2 weeks. I'll just get back into the rhythm. Verse 7, as they danced, they sang this: "Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands." What's Saul's response to this? Saul was very angry. This refrain, some versions talk about being like, I think offense is another translation of that word. But he was angry. This refrain, this statement, this song displeased him greatly. "They've credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but me with only thousands? What more can he get out of the kingdom?" Key verse, verse 9, just put it up. Watch what Saul does next. Next verse. No, mustn't be there. Verse 9, "And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David." A close eye on David. Soon as Saul entered into comparison, the focus came off what God was calling him to do and onto what King David was being called to do. Now, you might laugh at the fact they were comparing how many Philistines they killed, and he killed thousands, and he killed 10,000, and you think how ridiculous they would compare. That was their context. And before we judge Saul and David, Saul too much, let's not forget that we do that. We compare each other's careers. We compare each other's marriages. We compare each other's children. We compare each other's houses. We compare each other's physiques. We're comparing all the time. We do the same thing. And the problem with comparison is that it takes your eyes off the blessing God has blessed you with and put it onto somebody else's, and it steals contentment. Now, Saul got his eyes fixed on David, who was supposed to be a blessing. And because he let comparison take hold, jealousy and envy entered his heart. And as soon as you get jealous and envious of another person, you're on short street, if that's even a term. Isn't it interesting in life how the brightness of the blessing can blind you to the blesser? Isn't that true? That God could have blessed you abundantly this year, but because he hasn't done what he did for somebody else, you start comparing. The problem with comparison, it's dumb, and I'm going to talk more about it, is because no two human beings start from the same starting place. We're not all gifted the same. So it's silly to do that. And so Saul got focused on acting like a king rather than worshiping the king. Now, what I love about David, Saul was more concerned with being king than worshiping the king, but David was catapulted from obscurity to the kingdom because he was a worshiper. Because he had a heart for the presence, because he was so fixed on the one who called him, therefore God could trust him. And so David is catapulted into power because God is always looking for the person whose heart is focused on him. And so David is catapulted up, and Saul takes his eyes off God and off his duty and starts comparing himself to David. Now, Saul then becomes for us a case study on the downward spiral of comparison. What happens in chapter 19? From that moment on, Saul despises David and he spends the rest of his days trying to kill him. He begins to try to kill off the blessing that God brought into his life. David was a blessing. David had no desire. He did not try to manipulate or rip the kingdom from Saul at all. David is an incredible case study of honor, the opposite of that. Now, I want you to see something here. I want you to really lean in here. I want you to notice what Saul says when he gets hassled about comparison. They've credited David with tens of thousands, he thought. He thought, but me with only thousands. He, but me. He, but me. Comparison always starts with but me. But me. It always starts with but me. Have you ever met somebody who every time you bring up a story, or they're the kind of person that connects everything back to them? But me people. You share something that you went through that was very difficult, and within seconds, they're telling you about what they went through in the same thing. Or you tell them a blessing you got or a promotion you got. Well, let me tell you what happened for me. But me people are infuriating, self-focused people. Now, the problem with but me people is, now I can't see. There's some but me people in the world. And I know, I've just got to make sure I can see the thing. The problem with but me people, right, is what does but me, because I can't see, is that self-focus will blind you to the blessing that's in front of you. Oh, I can kind of just creep down. But self-focus, and if you are a but me person, it will blind you to the realities of life. In fact, but me people, self-focus blinds you and you can't even see Jesus anymore because you've got but me glasses on. You're seeing everything through the lens of me. Self-focus blinds you and it trips you up and you no longer can see Jesus anymore. You just see the person next to you. You just see what you don't have. You have become blinded to the reality of the beautiful thing that Jesus is doing in your life right now. And the blessing. Every person in this room, no matter how hard your life is right now, has something to be thankful for. Every person. And but me will blind you to the reality of what's going on. I want to give you some signs that you might have put the but me glasses on. Okay? And it's not to beat anybody up. It's just so you can do like an internal I guess, just a check, a heart check. You have the but me glasses on if you can't celebrate the successes of someone else. If you can't genuinely celebrate with another Christian or another person, you've got but me glasses on. If you can't celebrate someone else's success or someone else's win, you've got it on. Here's another sign. You're stingy with your compliments of someone else. You find it hard to compliment someone because somehow you think if you compliment someone, it'll take away from you. That's insecurity, by the way. But that's a sign of but me. And then I don't say that to anyone to beat anybody up, but it's just good to do a little heart test this morning. Have you been blinded by self-focus and comparison? And have you had your eyes taken off what God is doing for you? The problem with comparison is nobody wins. You know why? Because comparison does one or two things. It either makes you feel inferior or superior. You either begin to feel superior to somebody else or you begin to feel inferior, and both are wrong and both refuse to bring glory to God. Nobody wins with inferiority or superiority. Now, Paul addressed the perils of comparison when he wrote to the church at Corinth. Look, could he write? Because there was a moment where he was being compared as a preacher to Apollos. And they were saying that Paul is not that impressive in person. They were comparing him. And watch Paul's response. We don't dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. Let me put that in my language. The person who thinks they're all that, not even going to play that game. That's what he's basically saying. They compare themselves with some who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves, I love that, Paul just having a little cheeky thing there, and compare themselves with themselves, watch what he says. They are not wise. The most dumbest thing anyone can do is compare. It's foolish. You know why? Because comparison will always cloud the clarity of God's call on your life. It will cloud the clarity of his calling because you won't be fixed on what he's calling you to do. You're distracted by what he's calling somebody else to do. It will cloud the clarity. Now, as difficult as that sounds, it's incredibly difficult for humans to do. Because I am that driver when I am stuck in traffic. Now, I just had traffic on another level in the United States. 6 laneways of traffic. Now, I am that driver. Well, used to be. I've grown and I've matured. But I used to be that driver when the traffic is banked up, that's always switching lanes. Does anyone join me on that? Like, I always think the lane next to me is going to get me to the destination quicker than the lane I'm in. So I used to be that guy that just goes from lane to lane to lane till I realize it really doesn't work. And so I've learned now, just be patient and stay in the lane. And I think a lot of us do that sometimes, is that we think if we just change lanes and be someone else or be what they want, somehow that'll be a pathway to fulfillment quicker. And it's always a dead end destination. Now, I want to show you, two lines make a lane, right? When you drive your car or when you're running a race, two lines, there's this lane and there's this lane, right? If you're wise as a driver, you'll stay in those two lanes. Now, it speaks to the lanes of a road set the parameters for which you are to journey on. And you are to stay inside your lane. And it really is a good analogy for what I would call the duality of destiny. The duality of destiny. On one side, on one line, is the universal line. And that's what every single person is called to do. And we're all the same. In other words, we're all called to become like Christ and bring him glory on the earth. All of us are called to the same thing. If you're a Christian, part of the journey is being transformed in the image of his son, Jesus Christ. You can't escape that. We've all got a universal calling that's the same, and to bring him glory. But there's the universal line, and then there's the other line, which is the unique line. And that is the line that is unique to you. It's your unique calling. It's your unique giftings. It's your unique personality. It's your unique skills. It's the thing that only you can do. And it sets the parameters for our destiny and our calling. The problem for me, perhaps not for you, is that I often drift. When I was in America just recently, because it's on the other side of the road, I had to keep remembering to unlearn driving on the left-hand side of the road. But I found myself in this habit driving in America. I kept drifting to the right. And I was like, why? I'm on the right-hand side of the road. And I think it's because we normally drive in the right side of the vehicle, so there was something in me that kept making me drift. But I had to keep watching that I didn't keep drifting across lanes. And I think for some of us, that's what we have to watch in life, is that we make sure we stay within the parameters of what God has called us to do and that we don't change lanes or drift into somebody else's lane. Because the thing that makes you different from everybody else is the very thing that God wants to use to bring him glory. The thing that is unique about you. I've come to realize something. I'm a wonderfully weird person. I am, and so are you. We're all weird, so we might as well just get over it. But I've come to learn that God gets glory when I'm uniquely me, when I don't try to be someone else. Now, just put that Ephesians 2:10 scripture back up. Yes. Now, in the New Living Translation, look what it says. It says, "For we are God's masterpiece." Masterpiece. He has created us anew in Jesus so we can do the good things he planned for us long ago. Now, I am no art expert, but I do know something about a masterpiece. A masterpiece is considered the artist's best work. It's considered rare and it's considered valuable. God is saying about you and I, you, every person sitting in this room, you are his masterpiece. His masterpiece. His crowning glory of creation. It's made to a high standard and it's incredibly valuable. Now think about this. God's greatest work on the planet was not the planet and the stars and the sunsets and the stars and the moons and the fish in the sea and the birds in the air and all the wonderful creation that brings him glory. That was not God's masterpiece, as amazing it was. The greatest masterpiece that God ever made was you, made in his image. So why on earth would you compare yourself to somebody else when he has made you a masterpiece? That verse really ministered to me this week again, that we are to celebrate the uniqueness of who we are. But society doesn't like that. Society wants to put you in boxes. Society doesn't like people who want to be themselves. We want to label people. And when we're confident, as the band comes and joins me, when we're confident in who God made us to be, we stop comparing ourselves and we start celebrating. We stop comparing and we start celebrating the unique thing that God has called me to do and created me to be. Is this helping anyone? I want to be vulnerable for you, with you just for a moment, because I sense that there's some people who have compared themselves and it's robbed some joy. But I've got to be very honest with you, church. I often feel the temptation to compare myself to other pastors, other leaders, other churches, other ministries. That's my context. You'll have a different context, but I do. I go to a ministry and I think, oh, it's different to me. And I compare myself. And, you know, last week I was at a conference in LA. I was at the Bethel Heaven Come conference. Amazing conference. And my favorite preacher was speaking, Stephen Furtick. Now, he may not be your cup of tea, but that dude can preach. And if you've ever heard him speak, he, in my view, is one of the greatest communicators alive on the planet, in substance and in delivery. As I sat and watched him do his thing, I'm sitting there, talk about feeling inferior. As I watched this guy going, I'm going, man, I will never and can never do what you do. I just can't do it. And I wish I had his hair. But anyway, you might think that's ridiculous and you might have a different context, but that's my context. Is when I see a guy doing what I do on that level, I go, man, I could never do that. And I begin to compare myself. Until I realize this, and this is not any groundbreaking truth, but I promise to you, church, that I can and will never be Stephen Furtick, but I'll be the best Brad Hagen that I can be for you and for this church. And the greatest gift I can give you as your leader is to be me, is to be completely me and be not be what you want me to be, but to be what God wants me to be. God does not want a Stephen Furtick clone. He wants a Brad Hagen original. He doesn't want clones. He's an original. He wants who we're created to be. And I'm going to be me. Me who is passionate and energetic every day of the week about the kingdom of God. Me, the caffeine addict who talks about coffee way too much. Me, the guy who tells corny dad jokes that none of you laugh at and you just laugh trying to be polite. That's me. I'm going to be me who laughs at my own humor. Me, the worship team wannabe. Okay, maybe I need to move on from that delusion. That's riding someone else's lane. But here's the truth. The reality is, as much as I want to do what these guys do, he has not given me a voice to sing. But he gave me a voice to preach. He gave me a voice to preach. And give me a microphone and the Bible and things happen. I'm not called to do that. And if God didn't give it to you and he didn't put it in you, then he knew you would not need it to fulfill the call of God on your life. Everything you need to do is already in you. Stop complaining to the master about the pieces you did not get. You are a masterpiece. Stand with me, church. It's called you to run your race. Do you know what I've discovered as we come to a close? I've discovered this about choosing to stay in my lane. This is what I've discovered. There's always grace for your race. There is always grace for your race. Corny as it sounds, He will never give you the grace to run somebody else's race. If you're not called to be a preacher, don't try to do it. If you're not called to be a pastor, don't do it. But if you're not called to do something, don't try to do something you're not graced to do. There's always grace and strength for the race you need to run. Empowerment, enjoyment, contentment, fulfillment, and peace always comes as a result of running your own race. But frustration, disappointment, disillusionment, and fatigue will always be the outcome when you try to run someone else's race. And for me, when I look around and take my eyes off Jesus, just for me, I always feel like a failure. I constantly feel like a failure when I take my eyes off Jesus. When I look at somebody else's marriage, when I think about the fact they own 4 houses yet, and I don't own any yet. When I haven't done this, or I don't have kids like this, and when I look at everybody else's race, I feel like a failure. But when I fix my eyes back on the one who called me to run my race, I find there's grace, there's strength, there's acceptance, there's mercy. I feel the smile of God. I sense the pleasure of the Father running my race. As we finish, I just want to finish on this illustration, then we'll finish. But back in the 80s, I think it was, there was a Goodwill Games in Edmonton, Canada. It was like a mini Olympics, and the Jamaican team were the favourites for the 4x4 relay, 100 metre relay race, and they were there, and up until the first 2 legs, the Jamaican sprinters were leading, and as they came to the third leg, ready to pass the baton on, the guy that was supposed to run the third leg just had a moment where he looked up at the screen in the stadium because one of his friends was about to compete in another event. And just for a moment, he just took his eyes off the finish line and somebody else. And as the second leg runner came, he came flying up and he crashed into. A crash happened to the third leg runner simply because he took his eyes off the finish line. I'm trying to say to you this morning, or asking you a question more to the point, have you got your eyes on Jesus, or have you got your eyes on other Christians? Have you got your eyes on their sin and their flaws and their failures and what they should be? For some of you, this is a marriage principle. Stop looking at their flaws and failures and start thanking God for the gift that He gave you. I just felt that was a word for someone. If you look for flaws and failures and mistakes, you'll find them. If you look for it in me, you'll find millions of them. And we look to Jesus, find there's a bit more grace for one another, there's a bit more mercy for one another. There's a little bit less judgment in the room. We begin to realize that none of us have got it together. None of us deserve His mercy and His grace. And what right do I have to judge another person's race when I'm flat out trying to finish my own? I want you to close your eyes for a moment. And I want us as a church to begin to fix our eyes on Jesus. This is a holy moment because some of you are getting set free from the shackles of comparison. Forget about your best friend's marriage that looks better than yours. You think their life is somehow better. Look, life is about seasons. Everyone is in a different season. Foolish to compare yourself in your season. Just begin to fix your eyes on the one who's called you.